Welcome to Healthcare Mixtape, where we're curating the ultimate playlist of healthcare content that you may have missed the first time. Here we share bonus episodes and greatest hits from some of our favorite shows, as well as exclusive interviews with industry insiders, all focused on healthcare changemakers and the disruption of the now. This show is produced by Shift Forward Health, the channel for changemakers. Subscribe to Shift Forward Health on your favorite podcast app, and you'll be subscribed to our entire library of shows. One subscription, all the podcasts you need, and it's all for free. I'm Jared Johnson, your playlist curator, and it's time to mix it up. Hey there. Today, our Greatest Hits collection continues with one of the top episodes from the Healthcare Wrap. It's titled Innovation, Agree to Disagree, and it originally aired in April 2022. Our guest was Alan Shoebridge, Chief Communication Officer for Providence, Oregon, and well-known advocate for healthcare marketers and communicators. Alan and I had a playful back-and-forth conversation about the who, when, and how of innovation. We wanted to demonstrate how to find common ground while representing different views, and it turns out that we believe a lot of the same things, such as valuing innovation does not devalue operations. Retail brands can be good for consumers' healthcare choices, but it won't be easy for them to succeed. And innovation requires dedicated resources. You can't just assign it to someone on top of everything else that they're doing. This episode is on our Greatest Hits playlist because it represents the types of conversations that happen in a lot of organizations, and we wanted to model a path forward. We hope you find this super high value, so check it out. Let the mix begin.
The flow.
All right, let's get into the flow, everybody. Give it up for Alan Shoebridge. He's the Chief Communication Officer for Providence, Oregon. Alan's in the house today to share some provocative thinking about consumer-first health. We're going to dive into some differing perspectives. I think that hopefully we're going to find some more common ground than people might realize in terms of where we hope healthcare goes from here. So, Alan, say hello to our listeners and tell us something that gets you out of bed in the morning.
Hey, Jared. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here for the conversation today. Well, you know, it's funny. I'm not a coffee drinker, so it's not coffee that gets me out of bed. Sometimes I'll have tea. But, you know, I think right now what I'm excited about is here where I work in Oregon and, you know, across the country. We are recovering from COVID. We're having, you know, we're getting back. I think we're getting back to sort of the work we want to do. We're getting out of the crisis mode. So, you know, it's always been rewarding to work in healthcare. And even as we were kind of working in the real trenches with COVID, you know, now getting back to, I think, what excites us and telling our stories and moving on past, you know, what we've been dealing with COVID, at least for a while. I'm excited about it. And I know a lot of my colleagues are too.
I would agree totally to that. So what else did I miss in your bio? Like, what else would you like your listeners to know about you and your background and where you're at right now?
Sure. Well, one thing that I think a lot about in terms of how it's affected my career growth, you know, I started out in journalism, actually. I was a newspaper reporter, you know, and it's really taught me how to think about things, how to clearly communicate, how to tell a good story. And just one of those experiences where I enjoyed doing it. I knew I wanted to not be doing it forever, but I really credit it for helping me kind of communicate and be able to think differently about stuff. And I really enjoyed that experience.
Oh, very cool. It's interesting how often I see journalism in someone's background that ends up in places where, quite frankly, we need it.
Right. Well, just being able to tell a story. You know, you think it, I talked about COVID, but, you know, what do you need to communicate? What's the most important thing? Put it first, build your story. Like, that you learn that discipline, and you also just learn to do things fast. And that's been a huge benefit throughout my career.
Oh, I can see that for sure. Well, I mean, in the work you're doing right now, there's a lot of a need to tell the story in the right way. So that actually kind of leads into where we're hoping to go with the conversation today. And let me try to set this up, and then I'll throw this over to you, Alan. But we're going to try a bit of a different format in terms of us being able to kind of come to a place where I think, first and foremost, I think people who know both of us realize that we like to share our, you know, our thoughts and a lot of different experiences and trends that we're seeing out there. And sometimes I think people might think that we're at odds a little bit when really, I don't know if we really are. I think we come from this from the same angle in a lot of different ways. So, I mean, I think it's safe to say that we very much respect each other professionally. We've both been in this space for a while. At times you've had questions about the place of retail brands in healthcare. And I've had questions about health systems' ability to create a more retail-like experience. And so I thought it'd be really interesting if we kind of bring both sides of this to the table. And for me, attempt to practice what I preach in terms of bringing overlapping, but still not completely the same perspectives to the table. See if we can understand each other's perspectives and get to a better place. And one point that you were mentioning to me before we got on the air here, I think is a perfect place for us to start. When we're talking about, in general, consumer first healthcare, and particularly retail health and retail brands as part of that, you were mentioning just in general about where people are coming from, especially those at hospitals and health systems these days. Do you want to get started there and kind of sharing with me right before we got on the air?
Sure. Well, I think we really do have a shared objective, which is to make healthcare better, to make it easier, to make it more consumer focused. And, you know, I'll just say over the last couple of years, you know, I've worked at two of the largest healthcare systems in the country. Each had well over 100,000 employees, 50 plus hospitals. And then I also worked at a small community health system too, a one hospital system. And I'll tell you what they have in common is large or small, both focused on trying to make things easier, trying to enhance the experience. And I would just say, I think over the last probably 10 years, I haven't met an executive in the country, anyone running a hospital, who wasn't thinking about making the experience better, who wasn't looking at some of the new entrants coming into healthcare and thinking, how can we do things like they're doing it? Or how can we partner with them? Or really thinking about innovation. So I think that's the best part. I mean, everyone seems very aligned to that. Now, there's very legitimate questions, I think, that you raise a lot about how fast can we do this? Are we doing everything we can to make it happen? So the nice thing is, I think the destination is shared in a lot of ways. It's just arguing, for lack of a better word, of like, how long is it going to take to get there? How are we going to do it? Who's going to be doing what? I think that's where the differences lie, but not in the ultimate goal, which again, better healthcare, better consumer experience. And honestly, like, who doesn't want that? Unfortunately, all of us at some point in our lives are going to interact with healthcare. It's just, you can't avoid it. And when you interact with healthcare, you want it to be as good as possible. So I just feel confident saying the people working in healthcare are pushing for that. And again, it just varies on how we're going to get there, how we're going to do it, how long we're going to take. I think that's the things that we're going to have to iron out and figure out.
I respect that. I really do. I feel like the recognition that there's a shared destination here is easy to get lost in all of the hubbub, everything we read online, and all of the positioning, if you will, of different brands and voices out there to try to say one thing or the other is better or going to happen. And when it does or doesn't, then, you know, that means these other things aren't as valuable, or a certain perspective just isn't recognized in the same way. And so I think that's a powerful place for us to start here. If I put that into an application, like, how do I apply that in a day-to-day way? One place it leads me to is this idea of, if I'm trying to look at everything from the consumer's perspective, because I will tell you, on my own journey, I've learned a lot along the way. I came up from a very, I'd call it a channel-based and strategy-based perspective, meaning as new channels came on, whether that was websites, social media, mobile apps, first on a smartphone, then on a tablet, different sizes, then responsive design on a website, then that turned into podcasting and other channels, where there were so many happening so quickly that we had to spend a lot of time and effort learning the rules of engagement for each of these channels, and then those rules would change. And so as a result, in some of the organizations I worked for, I would notice that it was hard to put your finger on, are we keeping the customer's perspective at the center? And sometimes the answer was yes, and sometimes it really wasn't. So when I'm trying to do the same thing right now, and I'm trying to look at healthcare choices from a consumer's perspective, I would first and foremost define consumer as somebody who is either currently experiencing and encountering the healthcare system, or they will need to in the future. So they're at least someone who's attempting to address their own health and wellness, I guess, is my standing definition. So from that standpoint, somebody who maybe isn't actively a patient like today, but could be tomorrow, then from that perspective, we do hear a lot of feedback about understanding the choices that we have. So when we hear about new entrants and new disruptors, as some call them, I do like to call them that just because I feel like if they go the places they say they're going to go, then it will disrupt a lot of the business systems behind traditional healthcare. So when we hear about new entrants, and these are consumer brands for the most part, they're retail brands. It's the ones we do talk a lot about on this podcast, and you post a lot and talk about them too, Alan. They're the Walgreens, Walmart, CVS, Amazon, Best Buy, Dollar General, you name it. It seems like everyone's in healthcare now. I'm waiting for like Tide detergent, I don't know, CrossFit, whoever it is, they're all in healthcare now or planning to be, it seems like. So from a consumer standpoint, it seems like in general, that could be a good thing. Like some of those services that they offer could be a better choice for me. It just, it puts me as a consumer in this tough place of, but do I ask my doctor about it? like how do I weave myself through that new landscape? How do I know what the choices are and how do I trust what they are? Even if some of those new choices are better for me ultimately. So I think there's a big challenge there in recognizing that, is that true? Are some of those offerings from these consumer brands a good thing for consumers or not? That's a question I try to think about a lot. And I think that answer could change, you know, depending on our point of view. What do you think about that just in general, the thought that some of the choices from retail brands could be good for consumers, but then that means it's hard to figure out?
Yeah. And I think that they will be. You know, it's just funny. It made me recollect too, that, you know, I talked about how much our thinking within healthcare systems has changed over the past decade. And I remember, you know, 10 years ago, having a conversation about consumers, and that word was controversial. Like, oh no, we don't use that word. We have patients, you know, we don't have consumers. But now, if you're in meetings, the word consumer and patient are used very interchangeably. And the kind of whole thinking about consumerism, I think it's really changed, and healthcare organizations are embracing that and trying to figure out how to deliver it. Now, I think that, like you said, these services, there's going to be a lot of positives. And I mean, we see positives on some of these things because honestly, there's services that we either in some communities can't build up fast enough, or there's not enough demand, but maybe the demand could be handled by telemedicine, something like that. But so I think there's this piece around where it's going to fill gaps in care that could be actually very helpful. And I think you'll see a lot of healthcare organizations, we've already seen this, partnering with some of these new entrants too, to team up and do things and close gaps in care. And I just feel overall too that the convenience factor is really important. I think the hard part is going to be, how do all these things connect? So, you know, like you may have, let's say you have a visit someday with, maybe soon, with Amazon, you're getting a telemedicine visit, you're talking to a nurse practitioner, or maybe a doctor, and you've got a simple concern. And that's great, you handle it. But what if it becomes more difficult? What if that suspicious mole or something might be cancerous and you need to actually get referred into someone who can actually take a look at you or evaluate it? And then worst case scenario, if you actually have to have some sort of operation or treatment or whatever. So how do we connect that? Because I think you're right, the convenience factor up front is going to be very helpful. And for many types of conditions and things you're dealing with, it's great, but you lose the connection. Like, how do you get into the system? And that's where I think we are going to be working between sort of the, you know, more traditional providers and the new entrants to close those gaps or leverage the data or do that. And it just remains to be seen, I think, how all that's going to work. Do you run into a place or a problem where people are almost overwhelmed with choices and systems that don't talk to each other? And that could be actually something that we kind of wrestle with, and we see if there's going to be a way to harness that all. But I think the choice factor is really important. You know, when I have my primary care doctor, you know, I made an appointment down in California before I moved up here to Oregon, and my doctor's office said, do you want to do it virtually or do you want to do it in person? And my answer was, well, what can I do quickest? You know, like if I can do video today, I'll do that. If I can do in person, I'll do that. But just having the benefit of that convenience was really important to me, and I really enjoyed it. And we know there's going to be times where the virtual visit isn't going to be sufficient. They're not going to be able, they need to see you, they need to run a test. So again, it's connecting all that. And I think the other question is going to become around access to the options. So for people who can maybe pay out of pocket, or if the service isn't covered by their insurance, can they afford it? Well, some of these things that are closing gaps are really helpful. For people who are more vulnerable, or maybe they are on a state Medicaid plan or something, are these things going to be covered? Would they have the ability to pay for it out of pocket? So again, I think bringing all this into the market is very helpful. It's just going to become, I think, about connecting it. How do we sort of connect the experience so you're not on all these islands? You've got more choices, but you're more disconnected in a way. So that's going to be the challenge, I think.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. I think that's going to be the number one issue for the next 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. I don't know how long it's going to take to, you know, to get to a steady state where somebody has really figured that out for a majority of hospitals and health systems that works for them. And I think that's an important thing to acknowledge, like you just said. And that kind of actually leads to the next point that I'd love to discuss with you here. Because I know it's something that's near and dear to your heart, which is our honoring the work that our frontline workers do and have been doing well before COVID, but in particular, as everyone knows, the last couple of years, the incredible amount of work that our frontline workers do every day to try and save lives, and in particular, to have battled this pandemic. And I know I've seen it and encountered it myself, and I've had to be careful the way that things get worded when I start talking about, okay, hey, now we see all this need and opportunity for change and transformation with a capital T, and say, hey, like, let's change all the things we're doing and let's transform. Like, let's do all these things. Consumers want these things and we're not there yet. So let's just go for it. And I think it's really easy for that to be interpreted as almost disrespectful for the work that's going on day to day. You know, I want to make it clear that in my mind, calling for change, calling for transformation, that doesn't have to come at odds with the work that's going on right now. And hopefully it's done in a very tasteful and respectful way to show that, that it's not seen as disrespectful. I know you've written on this topic numerous times lately about how don't come to me and talk to me about all these grand new big ideas if you're not even acknowledging the way that things are working right now. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, no, I think it's a really great point. And I think there's a couple of things happening. There's been times when people are getting ready to roll back mask mandates and do things, and still you've got like hospitals that are at capacity. And you had this sort of disconnect of, well, a lot of people are just going about their lives, but if we're working in a hospital, we're seeing full COVID wards and, you know, horrible situations. And we're bringing, patients are coming in who are claiming they don't have COVID and we're fighting with them. And, you know, so there's just been this landscape of, I think that what's happening in the hospitals at various times for the last 2 years has been very, very difficult. And so when you've got a full patient ward, when your hospital is 60-70% COVID patients, and you're just basically fighting to triage and just keep it running, that's when it becomes very difficult to say, well, okay, well, you know, what about this new thing we ought to do or this enhancement? And it's been, I think, a balancing act for, you know, the most progressive systems to kind of keep that work moving, while at the same time acknowledging like this is not standard operating times for us. And, you know, that's been challenging. So it's just adding, I think it's adding that perspective, because you need to keep this work going. You need to keep thinking about how to transform care. We've had that dialogue going throughout the last 2.5 years, but it just needs the context of, at the same time, what's happening on the ground floor, what's happening with our caregivers. So it's been a really unusual time, a really challenging time. I know I shouldn't say unprecedented, it's become a cliche, but honestly, like it's a huge level of disruption. And I think the way you continue to work through a time like that, but still you focus on that end state goal, which is we want a better experience for the consumer, so that when our access opens up, when our staffing stabilizes, that we can provide the best possible experience. So we need to keep working toward that goal. And I think that's the way you do it. I think you start with that end state of mind. We want the best experience for our patients and those we serve. But we acknowledge that right now, especially during a lot of 2020 and 2021, it is very difficult to shift our focus from basically an emergency crisis situation to thinking about enhancing things that, you know, some people might consider, you know, nice to haves. Well, right now we're in a triage situation. So, but, you know, we're coming out of that. And that's, like I said, at the top of the podcast, I mean, we're entering a space now where, and it's hard to know how long we'll last because we've seen the peaks and valleys, we've been on the roller coaster, but right now we're coming out of it. And right now is the time to think about maximizing your planning. Think about maximizing these strategies, and really for as long as we can, hopefully it'll last. Hopefully we won't get a huge spike or a huge surge, but let's maximize our time in that period where we can actually focus on the transformation and the enhancements. And I think people are doing that. That's what I've seen. So I'm encouraged by that.
How can we bring a consumer's perspective into the design and strategy part of planning, like the planning you were just mentioning? It's just interesting to start to see, I think, a little bit of change and redirection happen. And it's kind of exciting.
Yeah. Something you said made me think about who has to drive this sort of work within an organization. I do think the most successful way to do it is to sort of carve out people who just think about this. Because if you just layer, oh, our consumerism focus, like, let's just have marketing do it, or let's just have our strategy team do it, or in addition to everything else that they're doing, you can drive some change and you can do some things, I think, incrementally, but you won't get as much value if you do that versus, say, actually putting some dedicated resources to it. And so like at Providence, you know, we've stood up this digital innovation group, and this is like an area that's what they concentrate on. They concentrate on innovation. They concentrate on consumer-centric experiences. that's their focus. And I know not everyone can have the resources to stand up something like that. But I think even at some smaller systems, it really behooves you to like hire someone and put them in charge of this. And don't just add it to someone's day job and think that, you know, off the side of your desk, you can do all this extra stuff. Again, you can do some things and it's better than nothing, but I really do think that having someone who champions this, who can pull levers throughout the organization to make things happen, and this is what they concentrate on every day, you're going to have a lot better chance of success of driving that innovation. Because I think the other challenge, and you mentioned this a little bit, but you know, once you start just doing something, you've got your order sets in, you've got a way that you process patients, it is disruptive to come in and say, no, we need to make this in the long run, we're going to make this easier. But in the short term, we're going to make your life more complicated. As you, a staff person, we're going to make the next 3 to 6 months really complicated. But the end state is that it's a better experience for our patients. They enjoy it better. The outcomes are better. The loyalty, on the end, this is all good for all of us. But you need to be aware this is going to be disruptive for a while. And you need to have someone who champions that day in, day out. Because if you're just trying to do it here and there, it's going to be very difficult to get that change done.
Oh, I totally agree. That's what gives you a leg hold to be able to. A leg hold. That's what gives you a foothold to be able to scale that eventually. But yeah, it's got to work somewhere, and somebody's got to own it at some point. And then it can become part of the culture. But like that, none of that happens magically. And in fact, that's funny. That kind of leads to the final point I have for you here, which is one of those things I've just seen exchanges online, and I feel like it's probably just the result of people not quite interpreting things correctly on social media, right? Crazy how that happens. but it's this thought that valuing innovation doesn't devalue operations. And what I mean by that is the disconnect a lot of times between the new leader or the consultant that comes in to an established healthcare organization and says, I've got all the answers for you. Here's how we're going to innovate. We're going to transform everything. And they bring a lot of confidence and enthusiasm and data and case studies and even prior experience. And they're like, these are all the ways we're going to do it. It's basically changing all the things that you're doing right now. It's kind of what you were speaking about. It's like, even if it's just the next 3 to 6 months, right? We're going to change a lot or just give you a lot more to do on top of what you're already doing. You're going to have to do the things you're doing now better. You're going to have to optimize that while doing something in a different way at the same time. And so it just comes across to those who are in operations, who are day to day actually doing the majority of the work. They're managing two directions. They're rarely getting all the credit, you know, but they're doing the majority of the hands-on work, and they are explaining to people how we're going to have to keep changing all these things. They're the ones in the trenches, and they're the ones who hear a consultant or a new leader like this and just think, yeah, that's not going to work. They just don't understand what it's like to work here day to day. They don't realize the sunk costs we have, or the technical debt, or the staffing issues, which, you know, you and I could probably spend a whole other episode talking about the staffing issues right now. And now they're telling me to transform or innovate. And you're like, yeah, right. you know, like that's not going to happen. You know, I can be told to, but I see so many holes in this boat. I don't even know where to start. Like, why didn't they ask me about this? That's a big disconnect. And yet, if we're being real, it happens a lot. And so there's got to be a better way to move forward, and to move forward at a pace that's going to make the changes worth it. Because, you know, I definitely question sometimes the pace of change, but something's got to help us move forward and not devalue the people who are acting this out, like doing all the work. And I think that's a disconnect that we can come at a little bit more directly and acknowledge that, yeah, this actually happens a lot. And how are we going to get past that? Because I just see it as a major barrier, and maybe one of the reasons why culture-wise, we haven't always valued innovation, because we feel like it disrespects the work we're doing every day.
Well, yeah. And you know, it's interesting. Something you said made me think about the situation with how I think that I've responded to some of the new entrants into care. So, you know, anytime I read about, you know, a new service getting stood up, especially in person, my thought is that a lot of times the coverage of it is so-and-so is rolling this out. Oh my goodness, it's going to be a huge success. And it might be, but I often think about, well, what about the operation issues that you are going to experience? So I know that if you're going to set up in-person healthcare right now in this country anywhere, you're going to have some barriers. Staffing, like you just said. So are you going to be able to get your doctors, your nurse practitioners? Where are you going to find them from? Now, you know, people are changing jobs and things are very fluid right now. But again, you're going to have to pay pretty significant wages for that staffing. The pipeline for getting staffing in the future is tough. And I think the other thing is the bigger some of these entrants get, well, I've got news for them. They might be looking at union negotiations down the road. So there's a lot there that, again, it's not to say that they're going to be unsuccessful, but it always rankles me a little bit when it's just like, well, so-and-so will just roll this out and it'll just be a success because they're really smart at logistics or they've been really good on the retail food, whatever. And I think those things are important and that gives them maybe a leg up on something or an advantage in a lot of ways, but it doesn't necessarily jive with, well, here's all the things that do make healthcare very difficult and you will have to work through those. Now, you know, you might be very successful. You might be able to leverage, you know, your scale or your technical abilities in a way that traditional healthcare can't, but you have to acknowledge that those are going to be barriers and some are going to be difficult and some are going to fail. I mean, we've seen so much happen like in the health insurance side of new entrants coming in and trying to offer insurance and just losing a lot of money quarter after quarter after quarter. Now, it's not because they're not smart or motivated or, you know, run by talented people. They are. They're just up against a lot of business challenges. So I think you have to acknowledge that. And that does kind of get into what you were saying about even when you're trying to drive change internally, you do have to acknowledge some of the barriers. Now, I think you have to hammer home on why we need to knock the barriers down when we can. And when you're trying to drive change and innovation inside of an organization, what I think you need to do is, again, you need to focus on that goal. Like, what are we trying to do? Why is this important? Get that buy-in. And then you have to get people who do have credibility. To your point about consultants just can't come in and say, this is going to be easy. They have to say, this is going to be tough, but here's why it's important. Here's what we're going to realize from it. You know, here's the benefit either to our patients or financially is more sustainable, you know, whatever it is, but you got to make the case with a dose of realism. And that's how I approach pretty much any industry news right now. I'm like, okay, this may be really awesome. This is a cool idea, but it's not going to necessarily be easy. And I think one of the comparisons I've heard a lot is some of the retail pharmacies are building clinics in person and things. And I think that's great, but I do often flash back to like, well, I go to those places a lot. They often seem very understaffed. You know, maybe they've got one pharmacist and one person working the checkout line. Well, if that's the same experience they're going to give to people at the clinic that are standing up, they're going to face a lot of issues. So it's just not going to be easy. I mean, I think that's the thing that I like to try to just provide a little context. This is going to help provide choice, convenience. It may be very successful, but it's not going to be easy.
Well said, Alan. Well said. I think we've really come to a good place here where, and I really just want to thank you for giving us so much to think about today and giving us so much of your time. As we wrap up here, I just want to give our listeners a chance to say, like, what's the best way for them to connect with you? And then any final words or thoughts that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, well, thanks. Well, you definitely find me on my website, alanshubridge.com. I've got a blog on there that I talk about subjects like we were just going over today. Also LinkedIn, Twitter, you can look me up there, just my name. I'm pretty easy to find. Yeah, and I think just a parting thought is I'm really energized by the fact that, again, like where we started our conversation, I think everyone, whether you're working in traditional healthcare organization, you're working in a new entrant, we're all focused on the patient experience and making it better. Everyone wants healthcare to be better. And that's the good thing. I think, you know, again, working through the frustrations around pace and how long it takes and, you know, can we drive faster, further? I mean, yeah, we should. So I'm energized and excited by the fact that I think we're all aligned to that end state, which is the most important thing. We want better care for the communities we serve. And I think that's a great shared perspective and objective we can have.
Well, thanks again, Alan. Stay safe. Best of luck to everything that you've got going on. And I hope to hear from you again soon.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you heard, please spread the word. Tell your colleagues to tune in for all the awesomeness, then leave a review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This show is produced by Shift Forward Health, the channel for changemakers. Subscribe to Shift Forward Health on your favorite podcast app, and you'll be subscribed to our entire library of shows. See our full lineup at shiftforwardhealth.com. One subscription, all the podcasts you need, and it's all for free. And remember, we might have a lot of work to do in healthcare, but we'll get there faster together. Thanks again.